Good morning. Welcome to Inquisition Update. My name's Tom Press, and I'll be your host for the next hour. You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Exercising our constitutional right of free speech, we'll continue our reading and discussion of the book A Woman Rides a Beast by Dave Hunt. We concluded Chapter 19 yesterday on the program, and we'll move on to Chapter 20. But before I do, for continuity purposes, as is my custom, I'll reread the last paragraph and the quote from yesterday's program. It says, Jerusalem has its Yad Vashem, that is, its Holocaust Museum, to keep ever before the world's conscience the 6 million Jews killed by Hitler. In contrast, there is no memorial to the untold millions of both Jews and Christians murdered by Holy Mother Church. The deceptively sweet words emanating from the Vatican cannot eliminate the haunting question from recent history, which Gunter Levy raises. Quote, when Hitler set out on his murderous campaign against the Jews of Europe, truth and justice found few defenders. The deputy, or rather the vicar of Christ, the Pope of Rome, and the German Roman Catholic Episcopate were not among them. Their role gives a special relevance to the question the young girl in Max Frisch's work, and Dora, asks her priests. Quote, where were you, Father Benedict, when they took away our brother like a beast to the slaughter? Like a beast to the slaughter, where were you? Unquote. The question still awaits an answer. Where were the priests of Rome when the Jews were led like sheep to slaughter? Chapter 20 is entitled The Slaughter of the Serbs. Yes, that's right. Rome hates Jews and is the very root of anti-Semitism in the world. Rome hates Serbs, who are Orthodox Catholics, that is the Eastern sect of Catholicism that broke away from the Roman Catholic Church in 1054 AD. And Rome hates Protestants, probably more than all. This book doesn't focus, at least so far, on the numbers of Protestants that were killed by Adolf Hitler. The world has forgotten them. But I maintain that their numbers, the numbers of Protestants slain by Adolf Hitler's Nazi regime, outnumbers those slain of the Jews. But we don't have our Yad Vashem. We don't have anyone that defends the deaths of untold Protestants of Hitler's Nazi Germany. Now chapter 20 begins with quotes. This one from one of the most diabolical figures in history. His name was Antonin Pavlich. He was referred to as Anti-Pavlich. He was the Croatian Führer. He was a fascist. He was a Roman Catholic, an archbishop, and eventually elevated to cardinal. Excuse me, I've mixed him up with Stepanac. Excuse me. He was the Croatian Führer. He was the leader of the slaughter of the Orthodox Serbs in the former Yugoslavia. The quote from Anti-Pavlich is this: a good ustashi is one who can use a knife to cut a child from the womb of its mother. Those are the types of people that Anti-Pavlich represents. Those who are so good with a knife that they can carve a child from the womb of its mother. Here is a quote from a work called Inside the League by Scott and John Lee Anderson. Quote, Anti-Pavlich as Poglavnik, that is, Führer of the nation of Croatia, and Stepan Heffer as Governor General of Baranja County, assured their places in history atop the mutilated bodies of nearly 1 million victims. Both were middle-aged Roman Catholics, members of Parliament, and participated in the genocide of their countrymen in murders carried out with a sadism that would shock even their Nazi allies, and both would escape after the war to Argentina via the Vatican rat lines to resurrect their movement in exile. To resurrect their movement in exile. Now we'll continue with chapter 20, entitled The Slaughter of the Serbs, and Dave Hunt writes, "The Vatican's backing of Hitler and Mussolini and the Nazi puppet regime in France during the Second World War was consistent with its desire to resurrect the Holy Roman Empire with secular leaders doing Rome's bidding. Such has long been the Vatican's dream and still is. It still is Rome's dream to resurrect the Holy Roman Empire, but not just over Europe, not just over the West or East, but the whole world. It's called the New World Order." Now he continues, he says, "France, which Pope Pius XI called, quote, the firstborn of the great Catholic family, unquote, which is to extend over the whole globe, the great Catholic family, together with Italy and Germany, were Europe's principal Catholic countries where the Roman Catholic Church held great power. Their governments were willing to work with the Church and even to establish formal relations through concordats." We talked about concordats, which are binding legal agreements, treaties, signed between the Vatican and the various nations of the world that grant, by means of a written agreement, a binding agreement, immunity for the priests, sanctity for the properties of the Roman Catholic Church, makes Roman Catholicism the official language or the official religion of the nation, and makes the nation the financial sponsor of the Church. Concordats are signed by the Vatican and agreeing nations to uphold Roman Catholicism and to help spread Roman Catholicism. Concordats generally give authority of teaching to the Roman Catholic Church in commensurate with Roman Catholic canon law that says the Pope is the only one who has authority to teach youth. So Roman Catholic Church, is given authority over the education systems of those nations. And I've suggested, though it's not public knowledge, it hasn't been revealed, the United States of America, if it doesn't have an official document, a concordat with the Vatican, it certainly has an unwritten one. Because all of these things are present in this country. Official state sanction of Roman Catholicism, immunity for its priests, the Roman Catholic Church has control of education in this country, the Roman Catholic Church's and its other properties are sacrosanct and outside the purview of the civil power, the priests are immune, and if we don't have a written concordat with the Vatican, we certainly have an unwritten one. And history is going to verify that, I'm confident. Now, he continues, he says, "Soviet communism's aggressive atheism and its ruthless destruction of churches made it the foremost enemy which Roman Catholicism had yet encountered in its long existence. Capitalist democracies, too, with their penchant for freedom of conscience, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, were incompatible with Roman Catholicism. So it was that fascism in the 20s and the 30s seemed to offer the best hope of uniting Roman Catholic Europe as a bulwark against the rising tide of world communism and the growing threat of democracies. The Vatican realized it was in a war to the death against Marxism-Leninism. It seemed essential to join in partnership with the emerging forces of fascism in Western Europe. the 1929 Concordat with Mussolini and the 1933 Concordat with Hitler were part of this policy. These important alliances reflected the skillful diplomacy of Eugenio Maria Giuseppe Giovanni Pacelli, who was Vatican Secretary of State on his way to succeeding Pope Pius XI as Pope Pius XII just before the World War II would break out in 1939. Both Mussolini and Hitler were Roman Catholics, and their leadership would strengthen the European Roman Catholicism. The Vatican's imperialism could grow side by side with Italy's and Germany's. Now he's going to talk about the intermarium, a term you may not be familiar with. He says, in the closing days of World War I, Cardinal Pacelli, the eventual Pope Pius XII, already a rising star in the Vatican's eyes, had been the papal nuncio in Munich. He had negotiated secretly for the Vatican with the Central Powers to save Germany and Austria-Hungary from defeat. These Catholic countries were vital to the Vatican's interests in Europe. Their breakup into smaller states would mean the formation of countries in which Roman Catholics would be in a minority, and the Church would thus lose its dominant position so important to its ambitions. See, Rome always seeks to be a majority in every country. That's why immigration is so important to the Roman Catholic Church, to help Catholicize the nations. Eventually, they seek to be a majority in every country to overthrow those constitutions and democracies and to replace imperialism, totalitarian dictatorships, like the papacy. That's what Rome has in store for this country, and I would maintain that even though there appear to be elections in the country where people can go and vote for their president, Rome picks all the candidates. So we have a form of democracy or a form of a republic, but we deny the power thereof, right? I mean, if we don't pick the candidates, if Rome picks all the candidates, then there won't be a Protestant to vote for, will there? So what separates the system as it exists in the United States today from just an authoritarian dictatorship? When the Pope picks all the candidates for president and high office in this country, and we've got no one else to choose from, it's a dictatorship in the form of a democratic system. Cannot be deceived. Now he continues, he says, President Wilson, however, had been determined to grant independence to the southern Slavs. Thus were born the independent states of Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia. Suddenly, the Roman Catholic Croats found themselves a minority in a new country controlled by the Eastern Orthodox Church. Okay? These are rival, war to the death opponents. Roman Catholicism, and the Eastern Orthodox Church. Rome's established long ago, ever since the split in 1054 AD, that the Eastern Orthodox Church is going to acknowledge the headship, the superior spiritual and temporal power of the Pope, and come back to the Roman Catholic Church, or they're going to be annihilated. And the Roman Catholic Church has used this country, the military and the government of this country, to bring about that eventuality. To either unite the Orthodox back to the Roman Catholic Church, or to annihilate them. Now it says to change this unhappy situation, where Catholics have recently been made a minority, with the creation of Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia, a campaign to destroy Orthodoxy in Yugoslavia and to counter the growing threat of communists and communism in that land. In pursuit of these twin goals, the Vatican made contact in 1920 with a group of quote-unquote white Russian intelligentsia who had fled the Bolshevik takeover and were determined to return to defeat the Reds. As this coterie of conspirators grew, it became known as the Intermarium, an international underground committee to liberate and unite the peoples of the Intermare region, bounded by the Baltic, Black, Aegean, Ionian, and Adriatic seas. This buffer zone of more than a dozen states would theoretically seal off the communists to the east from a new united Catholic Europe. As Intermarium's potential grew, so did its support for the Vatican, or from the Vatican, rather, even though by the 1930s it was clearly a fascist group involved in international terrorism. So, the supporter of terrorism in the world, and at this case, and I maintain today, is the Vatican itself. Okay? The Vatican is the terrorist of all terrorists. And if you've heard anything that I've ever said about 9/11, you'll agree Rome was responsible for 9/11. It was the Jesuit general behind the entire fiasco, and it was simply aimed at starting another Holy Roman Crusade in the Middle East against the Muslims, the heretic Muslims, and to put this once Protestant country under a dictatorial government bereft of a constitution and Bill of Rights, because the Patriot Act completely guts the Constitution. I've called the Patriot Act Roman Catholic canon law under another cover. And I think that holds. Now he continues, among its most vicious and sadistic leaders was a man named Ante Pavlich, who was destined to be of great service both to Hitler and the Vatican as the head of a Nazi puppet regime in Yugoslavia known as the Ustasha. Okay, the Ustasha. Roman Catholic militants. Militia for the Pope. Now, world communism has been an evil beyond imagination, responsible for the slaughter of untold millions and the unlawful imprisonment and torture of multitudes more. Unfortunately, many of those who made it their life work to oppose communism were its equals in savagery. After World War II, the World Anti-Communist League was infiltrated by, quote, terrorists, Nazis, and Latin American, that is, former Ustasha death squads, unquote. The Ustasha's background is important. We must understand what the Ustasha was. Now, under the subtitle Ante Pavlich and the Catholic Croatian Underground, Dave Hunt writes, the lawful leaders of Croatia, though Catholics, were suspicious of the political ambitions of the Vatican and justifiably unwilling to aid its support, aid its efforts. Thus, it was necessary to form an illegal army of pro-Vatican terrorists. This group of Ustashi was led by the Intermarium leader, Ante Pavlich, in partnership with Croatian Archbishop Aloysius Stepinac. These two arch-criminals were responsible for numerous assassinations, including Yugoslavian King Alexander and French Foreign Minister Barthou in 1934, as well as Croat Peasant Party leader Radic in 1928. The latter, Radic, had warned against and opposed the machinations of the Vatican and thus had to be removed. In other words, he was literally standing in the way of the slaughter that the Vatican had lined up for this area of the world. It says, as the mastermind behind the murders in France of Alexander and Barthou, Pavlich was sentenced to death by the French, but managed to escape. He'd already been condemned to death in absentia by the Yugoslavian government 5 years earlier. Mussolini, out of loyalty to the Vatican, gave Antonin Pavlich asylum in Italy and refused both French and Yugoslavian demands for his extradition. All over Europe, under Pavlich's leadership, the Ustashi were responsible for murders, bombings in public places, blackmail, threats, and other acts of terror aimed at disruption of order in Yugoslavia and the formation of an independent Roman Catholic Croatian state. Vatican diplomacy did its part to further the same goal. Backed with funds from both Mussolini and the Vatican, the Ustashi grew in number and power. Thus, when Hitler moved into Yugoslavia, it was ready to operate a Nazi puppet regime headed by Antonin Pavlich. Anti Pavlich, as he was known, and his Ustashi had a propaganda machine which turned out nationalistic Croatian historical revisionism and racial hatred calculated to appeal to the lowest level of prejudice and superstition. Croatia's population in the late 1920s was comprised, now get these numbers, about 300 million Roman Catholics, nearly 2 million Serbians of Orthodox faith, 1 million Muslims, and about 50,000 Jews. So here Rome is in the majority, and it says the Ustashi held out an appealing solution for those who wanted the Croatians in control of their country. Here's their resolution. All non-Catholics and non-Croatians, which is saying the same thing, all non-Catholics would be removed either by deportation or liquidation. This is what happens in a country that's majority Roman Catholic. You either convert to Roman Catholicism, or you get out of the country, or you die. That's what Rome would do right here in the United States, were it a majority power. It says, in order to achieve that goal, Croatia had to gain its independence from Yugoslavia. To that end, Pavlich had already in 1929 established training camps for his Ustashi guerrillas in Hungary and Italy. From these bases, the Ustashi sallied forth to commit their acts of terror against the Yugoslavian government. The Ustashi guerrillas were trained by the Italian fascist militia, wore their black uniforms, and aped the goose step, an outstretched arm salute, and eagerly awaited the day when they would quote-unquote liberate their country. That moment came when the German army entered the Croatian capital of Zagreb and summoned Anti-Pavlich from Italy. So there they are, the German army, right on the threshold of Zagreb, and all of a sudden Anti-Pavlich is sent from Italy to take over. Now it says the Nazis, fulfilling their Vatican's desire, declared Croatia to be an independent nation and set up Anti-Pavlich as the head of their puppet regime. Pavlich immediately launched his extermination program. His friend, Stepan Heffer, was made governor general of the county of Baranja, where he zealously enforced the Ustashi Creed. Quote, it meant that the slaughter of Serbs and the deportation of Jews to Nazi death camps was official state policy carried out by vigilante bands of Croatian terror squads that traveled the hills and the valleys in search of non-Catholic families. Unquote. That's what we've got to look forward to here if Rome ever gets the power. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
The program you are listening to is 100% sponsored by you, the listener, on this First Amendment Rights Media channel. You will notice that there are few commercials on this radio network. There's a good reason for that. Corporate advertising dollars come with strings that limit program content. So without your help, these programs cannot continue on internet or our several affiliates. If you benefit by the educational law programs, we ask you to give. If you are admonished or nurtured by the Bible and ministry programs, we ask you to give. If some voice a cause that you are passionate about, we ask you to give. If you believe in any of these, we ask you to support them as you would a missionary on a continual basis, as if giving a tithe for missionary radio. These programs are not commercially viable and must be supported by those faithful to the cause of truth. Look for the button to sponsor your favorite programs at our listen and schedule pages on the internet. Then, when you subscribe, we will send you the last quarterly MP3 CD of that program immediately and continue to do so with each new quarter. We will also give you unlimited archive access to all of our programs. We're asking you to give much less than a tithe so that you may also send support directly to a particular program host, cause, and anywhere else the Spirit may lead you. Do all to the glory of our God and Creator, for His holy nation, the only kingdom that will last forever. Thank you for listening.
Hi, Nicholas here. I used to lug those big jugs to the market to fill with water from those coin-operated filter machines, 25 cents a gallon or 5 gallons for a buck. I used to. Then I got the Big Berkey. Now I save my back and hundreds of dollars, too. I was paying $600 for the same 3,000 gallons of water that a pair of black Berkey filters will provide from my own tap for only $99. This means that your Berkey water system will entirely pay for itself with only 1,500 gallons of use, and then you will still have 1,500 gallons left before you need to replace the filters. Do the math. Stop throwing your money away on bottled water and filter dispensers that may or may not be delivering as promised. For a limited time, First Amendment Radio is offering 10% off on the most popular Berkey water systems. Visit the shopping page at firstamendmentradio.com or call us at 559-781-3773 for more information. Leave your name and address and we'll send you this special offer. Do it now. First Amendment Radio is an authorized distributor of Berkey products.
Welcome back from the break. You're listening to the second half hour of Inquisition Update on First Amendment Radio. If you'd like to see the program continue, please support First Amendment Radio, who sponsors the program. Now, we're continuing with our book, A Woman Rides a Beast by Dave Hunt. Speaking of this anti-Pavlich, the Croatian counterpart to Nazi leader Adolf Hitler, listen to this. Pavlich reprimanded Adolf Hitler for being too lenient in his treatment of the Jews and boasted that in Croatia he had completely solved the quote-unquote Jewish problem. He just ruthlessly and grossly tortured and mutilated the Jews and all non-Catholics. I mean, he literally regarded Adolf Hitler as being gentle on the Jews. It says the approximately 50,000 Jews who had been resident there upon the outbreak of the war were quickly either liquidated or shipped to the Nazi killing camps, mainly at Auschwitz. Now, what was the Catholic connection? Most of Croatia's Catholic clergy were fanatically behind anti-Pavlich and his unbelievably evil regime. Medals were even given by Pavlich to nuns and priests, thus betraying the fact that many of them played an active role alongside the Ustashi military. Franciscan monks in particular joined Ustashi battalions. Concerning Pavlich's relationship to top Roman Catholic clergy, two investigators write, quote, "When the Ustashi were ushered into Zagreb by the Germans, Archbishop Stepanak of Croatia immediately offered his congratulations to the Poglavnik, that is the Führer, and held a banquet to celebrate the founding of the new nation, the new Roman Catholic nation. As head of the Croatian bishops, he ordered the proclamation of the independent state to be delivered from all pulpits in the Roman Catholic churches in Croatia on Easter Sunday, and arranged to have Anti-Pavlich received by Pope Pius XII in Rome," unquote. Said Archbishop Stepanach, quote, "God, who directs the destiny of nations and controls the hearts of kings, has given us Anti-Pavlich and moved the leader of a friendly and allied people, Adolf Hitler, to use his victorious troops to disperse our oppressors. Glory be to God. Our gratitude to Adolf Hitler and loyalty to our Poglavnik, Anti-Pavlich," unquote. It was an open partnership between the Roman Catholic Church and the state, such as the Vatican loved, but had not enjoyed for 300 years. Pavlich's birthday was the occasion for special ceremonies honoring him in all the Catholic churches. Former BBC commentator Avro Manhattan, an expert on Vatican policies, has written this, quote, "Here, the Catholic Church erected a state in complete accord with all her tenets. The result was a monster standing upon the armed might of twin totalitarianisms, the totalitarianism of a ruthless fascist state and the totalitarianism of Roman Catholicism. What gives to such a creature of Vatican diplomacy its peculiar importance is that here we have an example of the Roman Catholic Church's implementing all her principles, unhampered by opposition or by fear of world opinion. The uniqueness, now listen to this, the uniqueness of the independent Roman Catholic state of Croatia lies precisely in this, that it provided a model in miniature of what the Roman Catholic Church, had she the power, would like to see in the West, and indeed everywhere." That's key for you to understand what Avro Manhattan is saying. That what the Ustashi, the Franciscans, the priests, the nuns, the cardinals, the bishops, the archbishops, the Vatican, the Pope, and everybody accomplished in creating this Roman Catholic state of Croatia, and the slaughter of millions of people, if the Roman Catholic Church had the power, it would do in the West. That's the United States, folks. And everywhere. That's the world. That's the New World Order. Continuing the quote, it says, "As such, it should be carefully scrutinized." It should be carefully scrutinized what the Roman Catholic Church, what the Vatican, and the Roman Catholic leaders in this slaughter did. It must be scrutinized. It must be learned. And it must be used as a warning to us here in the West what the Vatican would do if it had the power in the United States of America and the rest of the world. He goes on to say, "For its significance is of the greatest import to all the freedom-loving peoples of the world." He says, "As such, it should be scrutinized for its significance is of the greatest import to all the freedom-loving peoples of the world." If you're a freedom-loving person, and you love your freedom, you need to study and scrutinize what the Vatican accomplished in Croatia. It was simply a model in miniature of what the Vatican intends to do over the whole globe. Now, he says, once Pavlich took power, Archbishop Stepinac issued a pastoral letter ordering the Croatian clergy, that's the Roman Catholic Croatian clergy, to support the new Ustashi state. The involvement of the Catholic clergy either in active participation or in blessing the Ustashi-run Holocaust is well documented. One Franciscan monk, Miroslav Filipovic, headed the Jasenovac concentration camp for 2 years, during which time he directed the extermination of no less than 100,000 victims, mostly Serbian Orthodox. Archbishop Stepinac headed the committee which was responsible for forcible quote-unquote conversions to Roman Catholicism under threat of death, and was also the supreme military apostolic vicar of the Ustashi army, which effected the slaughter of those who failed to convert. He was in charge of the convert or die policy. A Roman Catholic archbishop. Stepinac. Stepinac was known as the, quote, father confessor, unquote, to the Ustashi, and continually bestowed the blessings of Holy Mother Church upon its members and actions. After the opening of the Ustashi Parliament, Pavlich attended the Zagreb Cathedral, where Archbishop Stepinac offered special prayers for his good friend and ordered a solemn Te Deum to be sung in thanks to God for the establishment of the new Catholic regime. The reaction of the Roman Catholic bishops of Mostar to the subsequent slaughter of the Serbs and Jews was to lament not that hundreds of thousands of innocent persons had been tortured and sadistically slaughtered, but that they weren't converted to Roman Catholicism. Quote, if the Lord had given to the authorities more understanding to handle the conversions to Catholicism with the skill and intelligence, the number of Catholics would have grown at least by 500,000 to 600,000. Some of this is just hard to read. If the Lord had given the authorities more understanding to handle the conversions to Catholicism with skill and intelligence, the number of Catholics would have grown at least by 500,000 to 600,000. Guess what? That 500,000 to 600,000 were slaughtered like butcher animals. Hitler was dumbstruck when he saw the brutality of these Croatians that had priests among them. The butchery is depicted now, available in pictures, what they did to these people. I can't even describe them. He says, among the most infamous Roman Catholic Church officials involved, in addition to Archbishop Stepinac, were Father Vilim Cecilia, later a key figure in Vatican's escape route for Nazi war criminals, who presided as priest at Pavlich's swearing-in ceremony, and Bishop Gregory Roseman of Ljubljana, and Ivan Saric of Sarajevo. Cecilia served as deputy minister vicar to the Ustashi military, in which he held the rank of lieutenant colonel. Known in Bosnia and Herzegovina as the Hangman of the Serbs, Saric declared that Almighty God was behind the Ustashi movement and that his blessing was specific was specifically upon their determination to free the world of the Jews. As a reward by the Vatican for his work, Stepanac was later made a cardinal. Though his crimes were well known, Antipavlich was received at the Vatican and blessed by Pope Pius XII. Quote, when the British minister to the Vatican, in private audience, ventured to draw his, that is, Pope Pius XII's attention to events in Croatia, the Pope referred to Pavlich as, quote, a much maligned man, unquote. So you have Pope Pius XII defending his man, his killer, his inquisitor, Antipavlich, said he was a much maligned man. One dare not speak ill of a man such as Antipavlich. You know, Rome is trying to make a saint out of Archbishop Stepanac. His body is under glass. And in a church where Roman Catholics can come and look at his body and bow down and pray for his intercession, there are high schools in this country that are named after Archbishop Stepanac, one of the most vicious killers in Roman Catholic history. American Catholics venerate this man. And you have to ask yourself, what do they secretly hope to achieve in this country? He's going to talk about the slaughter of the Serbs. It says, unlike the Germans, who were interested only in the quickest and the most efficient means of mass extermination, the Catholic Ustashi, with priests and bishops participating and giving their blessing, took great pleasure from torturing and killing. Most of their victims were not shot, but were strangled, drowned, burned, or stabbed to death. Serbs were herded into their Orthodox churches by the Ustashi, as the Crusaders had done with with the Jews in the earlier age. We talked about this before. They pushed the Jews into their synagogue, locked the door, and then immolated them, burnt the church down to the ground with the Jews in it. Okay? They did the same thing against the Orthodox Serbs. Well, what do you suppose they would do with the Protestants if they had a chance? All you ecumenical evangelical bellies that so love to rejoin the Roman Catholic Church, what do you think Rome would do to you if she had the chance? Now that you've accepted her as Holy Mother Church, you've condemned yourselves. And you put true Bible Protestants in jeopardy. You went to Vatican Council II and you put my head on the block. That's what you did, you evangelical bellies. You who renounce the Protestant Reformation and make the Pope your God, you put my life in jeopardy. That angers me. That makes you a mortal enemy to me. I have a friend that says Christians ought not to be angry. It's not Christian to be angry. It's not Christian to raise your voice and be angry. I say there's something wrong with God's people if they're not angry. Torturing and killing, that's what they want to do. They did it to the Jews. They did it to the Orthodox, and they're going to do it to Protestants. It's like I said before, there's no one who even counted the Protestant heads that were lopped off during the Second World War. We don't have a clue how many Protestants were killed in Roman Catholic Europe and in Russia. No one mourns the death of a Bible-believing Protestant. They're not even numbered. The world knows all about 6 million Jews, and my sympathies are with them, but not a word is mentioned about the untold millions of Protestants who've died at the hands of this whore in Rome. It says most of their victims were not shot. They weren't mercilessly shot in the back of the head. No. They were strangled, drowned, burned, or stabbed to death. Orthodox Serbs were herded into their Orthodox churches by the Ustashi, just as the Crusaders had done against the Jews in the earlier age, who then barred the doors and torched the timbers. One captured photograph shows Ustashi smiling for the camera before a table displaying the dead body of a Serbian businessman whom they had castrated, disemboweled, carved with knives, and burned beyond recognition, unquote. Now, Tom, Christians just shouldn't read horrible things like that. Tom, you're always focused on the negative. What about the rapture? You're always preaching gloom and doom, Tom. Why don't you convert to Christ and rest in Jesus like I do? Rest in Jesus like I do. Fast asleep. Dead to the world, dead to common sense, dead to history, and dead to the Scriptures. That's the kind of rest you're enjoying while Satan is devouring all that he can get. Says estimates of the number of victims exceeded 1 million. This is probably a realistic figure. Yugoslavia, in its war crimes trials, estimated that from 700,000 to 900,000 victims were, quote, tortured and put to death in the 24 concentration camps within Croatia. 24. You ever seen a map of Croatia? You can put your little pinky over it. Yet there were 24 extermination camps in Croatia. Many of those who were slaughtered in these two dozen concentration camps in Croatia, tens of thousands never even reached the camps. Many were Jews, but most were Serbians of Orthodox faith who were given the choice of conversion to Roman Catholicism or death. And Avril Manhattan says, if Rome had the power, that's what she'd do. Not only in the West, but the whole world. He says, both in Yugoslavia and the Ukraine, Roman Catholic priests, bishops, and cardinals, with the full knowledge of the Vatican, participated in and gave their blessing to some of the bloodiest and most barbaric massacres of the war, aimed at giving Roman Catholicism control of these regions. Fitzroy McLean, British military liaison to the Ustashi, the anti-Ustashi partisans wrote in a report, quote, "The massacres began in earnest at the end of June of 1941 and continued throughout the summer, growing in scope and intensity until August the terror reached its height. The whole of Bosnia ran with blood. Bands of Ustashi roamed the countryside with knives, bludgeons, and machine guns, slaughtering Serbian men, women, and little children, desecrating Serbian churches, murdering Serbian priests, laying waste Serbian villages, torturing, raping, burning, and drowning. Killing became a cult, an obsession. The Ustashi competed among themselves on how many of the enemy they could kill. In order to impress the Poglavnik, Antonin Pavlich, the Führer of Croatia, and be promoted or singled out for heroism, the bands would pose with their victims before the cameras. Captured photographs, they're too grisly to reproduce, show Ustashi beheading a Serb with an axe, driving a saw through the neck of another, carrying a head through the streets of Zagreb. In all of them, every one of them, the Ustashi are smiling and crowding themselves into the picture as if to prove that they had a role in the atrocity. Some Ustashi collected the eyes of the Serbs they had killed, sending them, when they had enough, to the Poglavnik for his inspection, or proudly displaying them and other human organs in the cafes of Zagreb." Unquote. She's drunk with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. Can you imagine? They went around, before they killed them, tortured them, butchered them, whatever they did, they first plucked out their eyes and then sewed them into necklaces that were worn around the necks of these cutthroats. Roman Catholic cutthroats. Ustashi. Catholic action. They were going to make Croatia Catholic. And that's how they did it. But we dare not talk about it. It's just too ugly for a Christian to talk about. It's offensive. We're not to offend anyone, we Christians. We're to be pious, unmoved by the most hideous atrocities ever committed in the world. We're just supposed to be, well, we're just supposed to give that to God. He says even the Nazis were eventually sickened by the atrocities of the Ustashi and intervened on occasion to rescue their victims. That's it. The fascists, the Nazis, the German Nazis even attempted to rescue some of these people from the Ustashi, the Roman Catholic Ustashi. I think I'm just going to let it go for now. We'll pick up Monday if I've got the nerve. You've been listening to Inquisition Update on FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Enjoy a rest in the Lord this weekend.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, you may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month. And you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus,